Our next topic is IPR estoppel, and our speaker is Paula Heyman. She's with McDermott, Will, and Emery here in Austin. Paula litigates patent and technology disputes in federal courts across the U.S. and before the International Trade Commission. She has extensive experience in patent interference and post-grant proceedings. And prior to law school, she was a circuit design engineer at Digital Equipment Corporation and IBM. Please welcome Paula.
Thanks for inviting me to speak today. So I'm going to talk today about a topic that I've been dealing with for over a decade. And I'd like to say that it's near and dear to my heart, but that probably would be a lie. So what happens if the patent or some claims of the patent survive an inter partes review in the patent office and the case ends up at trial? What invalidity defenses are not estopped under sections 102 and 103? Can patents or printed publications not known prior to filing the IPR be used in the litigation? Can product art that cannot be raised in the IPR be used in litigation? So in the presentation today, I'm going to assume that everybody knows the basics of an IPR. However, I'm going to quickly cover the statute governing both IPRs and IPR estoppel in litigation. And then I'm going to summarize what we know and don't know from the Federal Circuit with respect to IPR estoppel and walk through some case law showing how district courts have applied IPR estoppel. Finally, I'm going to try and leave you with some takeaways from the case law if you raise or contest an invalidity defense in district court after the patent has survived an IPR. So I assume that most people are familiar with 35 USC 311B that covers IPRs, but I did want to focus on a couple of the words here. Specifically, the statute limits IPRs to grounds under sections 102 and 103 and requires that those grounds be based on patents and printed publications. Now, a ground may be a single patent or publication under section 102 or a combination of patents and printed publications under section 103. Now, importantly, what we should notice here is that there's no mention of product prior art or prior use, sale, knowledge grounds from section 102 in this statute. And I think that everybody is familiar with section 35 USC section 315E2 that governs IPR estoppel in a district court. Again, we see that estoppel applies to any grounds that the petitioner in an IPR raised or reasonably could have raised during that IPR. I think it's important to note that the statute focuses on grounds and does not mention individual references. So, what do we know from the Federal Circuit and a little bit from the Supreme Court about IPR estoppel? Well, the Shaw case was the first Federal Circuit case to address IPR estoppel. In Shaw, the PTAB instituted some grounds raised in the IPR petition, but declined to raise others, or excuse me, institute others. The Federal Circuit determined that estoppel is limited only to instituted grounds, and they relied on the language during the IPR found in section 315E2. Now, under Shaw, any and non-instituted grounds in the petition were not estopped and could not be used in litigation if the patent survived. The Supreme Court decided the SAS case a few years later. Now, SAS didn't involve IPR estoppel, but it did affect the scope of estoppel. SAS held that the PTAB must institute all grounds raised in the petition or entirely deny review. And so what this resulted in was no uninstituted grounds. This year, the Federal Circuit in Ironburg further defined estoppel with respect to grounds that are raised in the petition.